Turning, if you will, to Matthew chapter 5 as we continue our study of the Beatitudes in the Sermon on the Mount. Just to remind ourselves, we've seen those attitudes or Beatitudes that are necessary to first enter the kingdom, that continue to be important in remaining in the kingdom. That we have to be poor in spirit. We have to be able to mourn. That we be those that are meek. We've seen that beatitude that's necessary for growth in the kingdom. That I have to hunger, I have to search after righteousness. Desiring always to know more about those things that are right and to put them into action. Now we've come to three beatitudes that are produced in the kingdom. Beatitudes that are very much reliant on these earlier beatitudes having already been developed. That one that's poor in spirit, that one that is meek, that one that is mourning over sin to the extent that he turns to God. To the one that is hungering and thirsting after righteousness, if he's developing in the kingdom of God, then these three Beatitudes we have been looking at and will continue to look at are necessarily going to begin developing in his life. Last week we got to see, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. This week we look at blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. And it's important, I think, as we look at these Beatitudes, and not just particularly these three, but even all of the Beatitudes, that we can begin to see that these are more than just external actions. In fact, these are all matters of the heart. These are all matters of the mind. All of these are going to require that we change our mind from the way that the world thinks to what does God expect? To how am I going to live the way that He would have me to live? How am I going to develop these things in my life? So all of them begin with an internal change, a change of the heart, of the mind that we'll be looking at today. Because especially that's pointed out here in verse 8. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. As we begin thinking about this beatitude, the first thing that becomes quite evident is that this is an inward action, an inward change that's going to take part in our life. It's not something we're thinking of that's purely external. This becomes evident when you look at the words in this verse, blessed are the pure in heart. And you begin looking at those words and you come across first heart. The word here, cardia, from which we would get our English word cardiac, cardiology. Other things that deal with the heart and with our circulatory system. And it begins to point us here, we're talking about the inward part of man. Not something that's merely external. You begin to look at how the word heart is used in the Bible. And we can begin finding that it's used variously of the seat of emotion. Let not your hearts be troubled, Jesus would say in John 14 and verse 1. Don't let your emotions be troubled. Don't be overly anxious. We think of the heart as being the will. Daniel 1:8. Daniel purposed in his heart. He set his mind, he set his will to follow God. We can think of it as the seat of reasoning. In Mark 2 and verse 8, immediately Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves and said, why think ye these things in your heart? He knew the seat of reasoning here, the seat of thinking was within the heart. We also see that in Hebrews chapter 4 in verse 12. Is it speaking of the Word of God that is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing of sunder of soul and spirit, and of the joints and marrows, is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart. We're not talking of a physical blood pump here. When the Bible speaks of the heart, so oftentimes it's speaking of that place in which we have our reasoning. We would much more think of our head, of our brain. as being our heart. That place where I think, that place where I set my will, that place where I reason within myself, that place from which emanates my emotions, which again are tied back to how I think about things. And so when He's talking about blessed are the pure in heart, we're speaking of those things that are internal, the heart. But then also we look at that word pure, and we see in it katharos, catharsis. A word used maybe primarily in psychology. A cleansing of the mind, of emotions or thoughts. Indeed, in general, we can think of it as a purging, as a cleansing from that which is filthy, from that which is contaminated, from dirt. And so we think about cleansing our heart from that which is impure. We want to remove from that place of reasoning, thought, emotion. Remove from it those things that don't belong. Purge them from our heart. It's the attitude expressed by the psalmist as he's crying out to God for His forgiveness. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Psalm 51:10. Make it like new again. The psalmist there was struggling with his recognition of sin and how it had destroyed his life. But yet, take that away from me. Purge me from that sin. And now create in me that clean heart. That renewed heart. That heart that is just like it was brand new once again. And so remove from me that which pollutes. But also within that idea of pureness, that idea of cleansing, we get the idea of a singleness of heart. A heart that is set on following God. It's unmixed with anything that is impure. We think of maybe oil and water. Oil and water don't mix. I've always had a hard time with salad dressings that you get off the shelf and they're separated. Maybe the oil or whatever else is in that have separated, and someone says, you just got to shake it up. That's just not right. It shouldn't be separated like that. You think oil and water, you have two different things there in a bottle, and they will separate from themselves. But that's not the idea of a singleness of heart. It's taking that which might be impure, that which might need to be removed, and taking it away. In that instance, we might think of taking the water away so that you're left just with the oil. I think maybe of the idea of smelting of metals, of the word just left me, of the purifying of gold. Basically the same type of smelting process. We heat it so that the impurities are brought to the top and they can be skimmed off and you're left with a pure gold. It's the idea here of a singleness. No longer mixed with those impurities. Those have been removed so that you're just left with that precious metal. And so when we think about the heart then, here it's going to be purified, it's going to be cleansed so that it is single. So that it's seeking after God and after Him only. This is the heart that is undefiled. The heart that wants to set itself on seeking after God and the things that are right. It's the heart that Jesus has already spoken of that hungers and thirsts after righteousness, verse 6. That puts God first in our lives. Think of Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33. That here we're going to set our priorities. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness and all these things shall be added unto you. Does God become the first, to become the primary object that we seek after in life? It begins to give us this idea of a purity. It's undefiled. No mixture. It's clean. The impurities have been removed. The pure in heart aren't going to say, well, it doesn't matter that I have a little bit of sin. It doesn't matter that I have a little bit of unrighteousness. It's not going to be content. Here is the heart that's going to mourn over sin. Here is the heart that in meekness is going to submit to God and want to follow His will. We'll say it again. That's not to suggest that one becomes sinlessly perfect. But yet at the same time, it's the heart that's not just going to overlook sin and say it doesn't matter. It's the heart that's going to mourn sin and seek again for that forgiveness of God. Jesus would say in Matthew 6 and verse 24, no man can serve two masters. You can't be defiled. You can't have this mixture. Either he will hate the one and love the other, or he'll hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. You can't have this mixture. In fact, we could go further and we could think about Paul in the book of Romans. And he tells us very plainly, you're going to be serving someone. But who is it going to be? In Romans 6, in verse 16, know ye not that to whom you yield yourselves servants to obey, his servants ye are to whom you obey, whether of sin unto death or of obedience unto righteousness. You're going to serve one of two masters, and there's no room there for serving both. He says you serve one or you serve the other. Who is it going to be? The pure in heart have a singleness. It's undefiled. I'm going to serve God. It's also one that very closely related to that is it's undivided. No hidden motives. This is a heart that is sincere, that can be shown. It's transparent. We not only show people who we are, but what we show is really what's found on the inside. And so here we can think of it as being that which is undefiled. Jesus is going to look at those that go about and do their acts of service to God to be seen of men. And in Matthew chapter 6, in three different occasions, verse 2, verse 5, verse 16, He's going to say they already have their reward. They do it to be seen of men. Their motives aren't pure. They have this mixture here, and so they are divided. But the pure in heart is undivided. Jesus said of those same people, this people draweth nigh unto me with their mouth, and honoreth me with their lips, but their heart is far from me, Matthew 15 and verse 8. It's divided. They want to show themselves as servants to God, while at the same time being servants of sin. It's divided, and it doesn't work. We can think maybe of James in James chapter 1, verse 6 and 8, when he's speaking of faith there and asking God. He says, let this person ask in faith, nothing wavering. He that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. Let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. You might be able to say a double-hearted man is unstable in all of his ways. We can't be divided. We can't say, well, yes, I want to serve God, but I want to have my pet sins that I'm not going to work on in my life, that I'm not going to try to remove, that I'm not going to mourn over. I want to serve God, but yet I don't want to appear as a religious person throughout the week. I'm going to have this divided allegiance. Or, like the Pharisees we discussed a minute ago, I want to appear as one that is religious, but ultimately I'm just doing it to be seen of men. All of these things, there you have a double-minded man. James says you're unstable. We have to decide that I'm going to be undivided, that I'm going to seek after God and Him only. But also, the singleness of heart is one that is united. One that has decided fully, that has decided once and for all, I'm going to serve God and Him only. No one else. It's made up his mind. Instead of trying to go in opposite directions, I'm going to move in the same direction because my heart is set on following God. The psalmist said, teach me Thy way, O Lord. I will walk in Thy truths. Unite my heart to fear Thy name. I will praise Thee, O Lord my God, with all of my heart. And I will glorify Thy name forevermore. Psalm 86, 11 and 12. Here, with all of my heart, I'm going to praise You. With part of my heart, I'm going to praise You, and part of it, I'm going to praise the ways of the world. It won't work. With part of my heart, I'm going to praise the idols of this world, or the temptations of this world, the sins of this world, the pollutions of this world, and with part of it, I'm going to praise You. It's not what He says. He says, with all of my heart, I will praise You. It's the same devotion that Jesus asks us to give unto God in Mark chapter 12 and verse 30. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all of thy heart, with all of thy soul, with all of thy mind, with all of thy strength. This is the first commandment. And do you begin to see in there here that we have this concept that when I give all of my heart to God, Jesus says, is that not the beginning of everything else falling into place? Is that not going to make everything right? That's why He says this is the first and great commandment. When I set my heart on following God, I'm going to follow the rest of His will. The second like unto it, that you should love your neighbor as yourself. When my heart's right unto God, when my heart's right unto man, I'm going to be fulfilling the will of God. I'm going to be seeking after and doing those things that are right. So we have to have that singleness of heart if we're going to have this purity of heart. So we're talking about the heart, that which is within us. We're talking about purging it from uncleanness, from that which would defile, from that which would distract us from God. The last point in that category, recognize, as we said a moment ago, this is not simply some outward action. It's not just simply some outward action that we're going to take or some outward change that people notice in our lives. Sometimes people want to begin with changing their actions. Jesus says you've got it all backwards. It starts by changing from the inside out. It's not simply outward change that's all of a sudden going to make your life right. Time and again, as we go through the Bible, we see that God called upon us to change the heart as we want to try to make things right with Him. We go back into the Old Testament and maybe think of Joel. As he told his people, rend your heart and not your garments. And turn unto the Lord your God, for He is gracious and merciful, slow to anger and of great kindness, and repenteth him of the evil. Joel 2, verse 13. Rend your heart, not your clothes. You want to have this concept of people in the Old Testament that would rend their garments to show great lamenting. Even as we talked a few weeks ago about mourning over sin. Is that mourning only going to be externally? We're going to go around with a sad face that people know, oh, I'm upset that I committed sin. And yet we're continuing in it. Yet we have no intent, no desire to change. There's no true cleansing of the heart there. There's no purity of heart. He says, rend your heart. Let it be changed. Not your garments, not just the outward show here. The same thing is found even as we come into the New Testament. James 4, verse 7 and 8. Submit yourselves therefore to God. Resist the devil and he will flee from you. Draw near to God and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners. Purify your hearts, you double-minded. If we're going to be looking for that purity, where is it going to start? It's going to start in your hearts. Remove that double-mindedness and set our heart, set our affection, set our will, set our thinking, set our reasoning, set all of it on seeking after God and His will. We see this as we begin to talk about obedience to the gospel. You can think of maybe 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 21. He talks about the flood of Noah. He said, the like figure whereunto even baptism doth also now save us. Not the putting away the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience toward God by the resurrection of Jesus Christ. You've been baptized? Why? Was it because you were filthy? You had dirt on your skin and so you needed to dip in the water that filth might be removed? No. It says this started as an inward change. An inward change that desired to do the will of God. It's not simply an external action. We can come and we can get wet by being immersed in water. But if you haven't changed your heart, if you haven't changed from the inside out, the actions don't matter. You can get wet and nothing's changed. We haven't been devoted unto God. We haven't shown obedience to His Word. So He says it's not the putting of the way of the filth of the flesh. It's not simply an external action here. Continues Romans 6 and verse 17. Did He not tell the Romans, the Christians here at Rome, God be thanked. You were the servants of sin, but you have obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered to you. Did Paul come preaching a gospel that was only based on externals? That said, as long as you get dunked in water, that as long as you show up every first day of the week, that as long as you eat this unleavened bread and drink of this fruit of the vine, then everything's good. Everything's covered. You've checked off your list for that week. You can go on home and everything's going to be all right. He says, no, you've started this with obeying from the heart. You started inwardly. To decide that I am going to follow and I am going to be obedient unto God. We see this also then as Paul is writing in the book of Ephesians. Ephesians 6 and verse 6. It says, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart. Now he is talking to someone that's already obeyed the gospel. Now he's talking to someone that's continuing obedience to the gospel. The specific context is he's talking here to servants and how they're to please the master, but he's going back to the Christian relationship to God. That you are doing the will of God from the heart. It started from the inside. You don't just change and, oh, I'm going about the steps, I'm going about the process, I'm going about all of the actions that I have to fulfill during the week. No, that talk about that in just a moment, but that change has to begin from the heart. It has to change inwardly. It's going to show in how we treat people, how we act towards others. Jesus is going to look the Pharisees square in the eye. He says, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, you hypocrites. For you are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but within are full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so ye outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within you are full of hypocrisy and iniquity. You're still in your sin. You're nothing but a hypocrite as you go about on the streets and try to show yourself as a servant of God. And why? Because you've made the outward look great. You've got the outward appearance down. You like to show off that, hey, look at me, I'm a religious person. But he says you forgot something. You're going through all of those externals and your heart's never changed. These are the same people to whom he says, you already have your rewards. Because everything that you do to be seen of men. And so you have your reward already. Think not that you shall receive anything of the Lord. Are we like that? We can easily become like that. That I'm so interested only in something that's external. We can do that in obedience to the gospel, that we can come and we can be baptized, but if it's not combined with true repentance, if it's not combined with believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God, if it's not combined with this great desire to do the will of God, to make a commitment to follow Him, what good has it done us? Likewise, it's good and right that we should assemble together as we worship God. But if we're just doing that to check off a list to say that I've completed those external actions and there's no heart involved, what good is that? It says this has to be an inward change as well. You've worked on the outside. It looks great. But inside, you're nothing more than dead men's bones. You think of a grave that's painted all nicely on the outside. It looks great. And yet that doesn't change what's on the inside. Dead, rotted, decaying bones. And he says, that's all you are. The outside maybe looks nice, but God knows your heart. Likewise, in Romans 12 and verse 2, we're called on to make a change. And it's a change that begins inwardly. Be not conformed to this world, but be a transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. Don't just be pressed into a mold that you can say, I'm doing the external actions, that I'm following this little checklist. But he says, you truly be renewed. Not just molded into the ways of the world, not even just molded into these external actions, but that you are transformed. The idea here of metamorphosis. You've changed from the outside in. From the inside out. And so, what's the end? 1 Timothy 1 and verse 5. To the end of the commandment is charity, out of a pure heart, of a good conscience, and a faith unfeigned. What's the end of the gospel that Paul was preaching, that he reminds Timothy of here? He said, the end is that you show love out of a pure heart. If we're growing as Christians, if we're being transformed by the will of God, then we're going to be growing into that purity of heart that has a good conscience, that is showing a faith unfeigned. And so true reform is that which comes from within. It has to be a part of our characteristic as a Christian. Our hearts have to be changed. And so pure in heart, it's an inward change. But then notice also, it's an inward change that shows outwardly. See, we spent that first section there talking about how this has to begin inwardly. How it's not simply external actions that we're worried about, but now what we have to understand is that while it's an inward change, it is going to show up externally. It's going to show in the change of our actions. And so we'll look at some scriptures to see that. That here is a heart that's concentrated on the things of God. It's concentrated on the things that are pure. And so is it not going to reflect its God? Is it not going to show the one that we are striving to be like? Is it not going to show the one that we're imitating in our lives? If I'm pure in heart, people are going to see it externally. Our actions are going to show what's on the inside. Proverbs writer long ago said, as he thinketh in his heart, so is he. Eat and drink, saith he to thee, but his heart is not with thee. Proverbs 23 and verse 7. His words appear as nice. His words appear as friendly, but his heart's set against you. Don't you be confused. Because as he thinks in his heart, so is he. His heart is going to show in his actions one day. Even though it may not show in his words today, it is going to show in his actions someday. Same thing Jesus warns us of in Luke chapter 6, verse 44 and 45. He says, every tree is known by its fruit. For of thorns men do not gather grape figs. Do not gather figs, nor of a bramble bush gather they grapes. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good. An evil man out of the evil treasure of the heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. We understand that principle. When I plant an orange tree, a peach tree, an apple tree, then I know what I'm going to get off those trees. I'm not going to go out into a pecan orchard here north of Brownwood and expect to gather a whole bunch of grapes or peaches. Those trees, if they bring forth anything, are going to bring forth pecans. A tree is known by his fruit. There are people that can look at a tree and tell you exactly what that is. I can't do that. It's a tree. That's about all I know. But if I look at a tree and it has pecans, if I look at a tree and it has apples or it has oranges or it has peaches, now I know what that tree is. That's an orange tree because I just plucked an orange off of it and ate it. But are we not much like that? People like to say, well, this isn't really who I am. Really? You're living a life of sin. You're participating in actions that you shouldn't be. Your language is such that it shows what's on the inside. And you can say all day long, that's not who I am, but your actions betray you. The things that you do, the things that we say, the places that we go, the people that we hang out with, those do reflect who we are on the inside. The only one that's in denial at that point is yourself. You've tried to deceive yourself, but Jesus says, out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. What he is thinking about, what he reflects on, what he fills his mind with, it's going to show in his words and it's going to show in his actions. Likewise, Jesus said in Matthew 15, verse 17 through 20, do you not yet understand that whatsoever entereth in at the mouth goeth into the belly and is cast out into the draw? But those things which proceed out of the mouth come forth from the heart. they defile a man. For out of the heart proceed evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, blasphemies. These are the things that defile a man. But what enters in, but to eat with unwashed hands defileth not a man. Saying, don't you understand, the food that enters into your body, it's processed through and it leaves the body. It doesn't affect your heart, your mind, your emotions, your thinking, your will. But what enters into your body, what is in the inside, what's in your heart, what you're thinking on, how you've determined to be, those are what defile a man. Because if you're thinking on thoughts that are impure, one day, given the opportunity, you're likely to fulfill it. If you're thinking on those things that aren't right, and that's what we continually process into our minds, they are going to come out. Our heart, thinking, reasoning, will. Out of that proceed these evil thoughts. That's the person that will one day murder. That will the person that will one day commit adultery. That is the person that will one day commit fornication or steal or lie about someone else. That's the type of person that you are, and it's shown by your actions. And so what does this warn us? If the actions reflect the heart, it warns us, watch how you train your heart. It's going to show us the importance of guarding the heart. The psalmist speaks of this, the Proverbs writer in Proverbs 4 and verse 23. He says, keep thy heart with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. Watch your mind. Watch your thinking. Watch your reasoning. If it's set on those things that are good, and if we're training it with those things that are good from God's own Word, it's going to produce actions in our lives that are good. It's going to show what that heart is reflecting on. Our life is going to reflect the purity of heart. But if you don't guard it, if you don't watch it, your life's going to begin to reflect the filthiness of the heart, the dirt, the contamination, instead of a pure heart. And so we also read in Philippians 4, verse 8, Paul's warning. He says, finally, whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. If you want somebody to change their actions, if you want to change who somebody is, and we include in that ourselves, where do we begin? You start by changing what you're thinking on. You start by changing what you're putting into your life. You start by changing the heart, and when you do that, you're going to change the external actions. You're going to show that heart outwardly. And then what's the benefit of doing this? It says being pure of heart is that inward change that's going to show outwardly, and the result is that person, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. This is the one that is thinking on God. The one that is thinking on the things of God. The one that's thinking on those things that are right and those things that are good. And so how is this person going to see Him? I suggest possibly in multiple ways. This person is going to see God in His work. Psalmist declared, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth forth His handiwork. Psalm 19 and verse 1. Paul reminds us we are without excuse because the creation screams to us, there is a Creator. Romans 1 and verse 20. This is the person that's going to appreciate all that God has done. You see, everyone can look around the world and see the same things. But it's the one that's pure of heart, the one that submitted himself to God, that's going to be able to look out and say, I see in all that's going on around me the very handiwork of God. I liked an illustration I came across. It said that two different men can walk out at night and see far different things. The one man that's untrained, unlearned, he walks out and he might notice little dots of light in the sky. for the one that's looking for it, the one that knows it. He walks out on a starry night. He sees all the constellations. He knows the stars and he can call them by name. If he's trained in navigation, he can go out and those stars can lead him and direct him. They both see the same thing, but it means two far different things to each one. To one, it matters but little. To the other, it is a fascination. It's the one that's pure in heart, it's the one that's seeking after God, that's going to have a far greater appreciation for all that God has done, especially in the creation. But not just in the creation, this person is going to have a greater appreciation for all that God does even in his life, the very care of God. Every good gift, every perfect gift, cometh down from the Father of lights, is from above, and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. The one that's pure in heart is more able, if you will, more attuned to the blessings that God shows him every day of life. He's the one that's going to recognize that God cares for us. 1 Peter 5 and verse 7. He's the one that's going to appreciate the statements of the psalmist in Psalm 139 that remind us God is always there. Where can I go and escape from the presence of God? Nowhere. But to the pure in heart, that is a blessing. To the pure in heart, he appreciates those things. And so he sees him in his work. He also sees him by faith. Think of Moses as it's stated in Hebrews 11, verse 27. By faith he forsook Moses, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. Much of the world doesn't care about God. They don't see him even by faith. The one that's pure in heart is the one that's seeking after, that's looking to God, that is single-mindedly focused on God. And like Moses, is going to see him who is invisible. I see this also in 3 John 11. Beloved, follow not that which is evil, but that which is good. He that doeth good is of God, but he that doeth evil hath not seen God. Now turn that around a little bit. What does that say? He that does good obviously has seen God by the eye of faith. Here is the one that's pure of heart because he has seen God. He's seen His very characteristics. He's seen His nature. He's seen His revealed will. And he's putting those things into action in his life. They have reformed him from the inside out. And it's shown in his life. And so yes, they've seen God by faith and it's altered their lives. It has changed them. But probably what I would suggest Jesus here means the most, is that we will get to see Him in eternity. That I will get to spend all of eternity with Him. It's the pure in heart that are going to pursue holiness, that's going to pursue the things that are right, that are going to hunger and thirst after righteousness. They've set their eyes on the One that is holy and desire more and more to be like Him. As Peter expressed in 1 Peter 1, verse 16, be ye holy. For I, that is God, am holy. It's the one that recognizes the statement of the Hebrews writer in Hebrews 12 and verse 14. Follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. The pure in heart has his mind, his heart, if you will, set on those things that are holy, those things that are right. And he's doing them in his life. The pure in heart are those that know, that trust the promises that they will see Him one day. The psalmist said, as for me, I will behold Thy face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake with Thy likeness. We shall see Him as He is, 1 John 3 and verse 2. We are the sons of God, and one day we will see Him as He is. We will be like Him. We will be with Him. In Revelation 22 and verse 4, they shall see His face, and His name shall be in their foreheads. The ones that will live in all of eternity with God. He claims them as His own, and they will spend that time throughout all of eternity with God, their Creator, in heaven. So we have to ask ourselves, are we pure in heart? Do we have or have we made that inward change? It doesn't mean that we become sinlessly perfect. But it does mean that we have that desire to cleanse our ways and to walk in that way that is right. That we have that desire to hunger and thirst after righteousness and apply those things that we learn about God to our lives. It comes from understanding Christianity is not just outward behavior. It's not just external action. It starts with changing our heart, which then is going to show or be seen in our outward action. Are we pure in heart? Are we desiring and doing those things that are right, those things that are good? Have we removed from our hearts those things that aren't right, those things that aren't good? We've trained our hearts by the very Word of God to pursue after that which is good, right, holy, those things of God. Purity in heart has to start with a cleansing as the psalmist did. He turned to God, "Wash me, make me like new." We're going to turn to God in faithful obedience to His will. But I'm going to hear His Word in full assurance of faith, put it into action in my life. I'm going to repent of my sin and change my will and turn and follow God. There's the beginning of the change of a pure heart. I'm going to confess Jesus Christ and I'm going to be baptized, immersed in water for the remission of my sins, that they be washed away, that I be added unto His body. That I continue then in faithfulness. As I stumble and fall, I'm going to recognize those things in my life and turn back and follow with God. He's faithful and just to forgive us of our sins when we would confess those things, 1 John 1 and verse 9. And maybe there's someone even today that needs the prayers of forgiveness, prayers and the help of the congregation that would allow us to go before the throne of God for you even this morning. To ask for that forgiveness, to pray for your strength as you go forward to live this Christian life. And will we decide to cleanse our heart by changing our will, changing it to the will of God, desiring ever more and more to be like Him, that one day I have that full assurance I will see Him. If you're subject to that invitation, wouldn't you even right now, as together we stand and sing, make that known.